Good afternoon. On January 9th, 2014, a chemical spill of approximately 10,000 gallons of 4-methylcyclohexane methanol, or MCHM, and a mixture of propylene glycol phenyl ethers, or PPH, spilled into the Elk River near Charleston, West Virginia. The chemicals leaked from an above-ground storage tank, indicated in the photo by the red arrow, about 1.5 miles upstream of a water intake, contaminating the water supply of approximately 300,000 residents or 120,000 households. MCHM is an industrial chemical used to remove impurities from coal. It has an obvious licorice-like odor, as we've discussed. PPH was a relatively small percentage of the spill, approximately 7% by weight of the total mixture in the tank, and has a similar function as MCHM. Toxicological data on MCHM and PPH are limited, and the known acute health effects include skin, eye, and respiratory tract irritation. The long-term health effects are unknown. In response, at 6 o'clock p.m. the day of the spill, the West Virginia governor declared a state of emergency, and the West Virginia American Water Company issued a do not use water order for 9 counties, seen in the map in yellow. Under the do not use order, residents were told to use the water only for flushing toilets and putting out fires, and the order lasted up to 10 days in some counties. On January 15th, West Virginia first requested a community assessment for public health emergency response, or CASPER, which is an epidemiologic technique I will talk more about in a minute. However, a CASPER was not performed during the response phase of the disaster immediately following the spill because West Virginia's resources were devoted to ensuring residents had access to alternative sources of water. The state determined that the topics addressed by the proposed CASPER could be addressed at a later date. CASPER is an epidemiologic technique designed to provide quick and at low cost household-based information about a community's needs in a simple format to decision makers. The goals of a CASPER are to rapidly obtain information about the needs of an affected community, produce population-based estimates for decision makers, and assess new or changing needs in any phase of a disaster. CASPERs are not intended to deliver food, medicine, medical services, or other resources to the affected area, and CASPERs do not include providing direct services to residents, such as cleanup or home repair. CASPERs are not able to determine why people are not returning to a community, nor can they establish current population estimates. Advantages of CASPER are that it provides generalizable data and that it provides population estimates for the assessment area. It is timely, relatively low cost, has a simple reporting format, and is flexible. A CASPER can be conducted when population representative data are needed. Because of the sampling design, CASPER results will be descriptive of the entire assessment area. Before conducting a CASPER, you need to determine if CASPER's 30x7 methodology, which I will talk more about, is appropriate by making sure the area of interest meets the size and feasibility considerations. For example, there should be a minimum of 800 households in the assessment area. Otherwise, another sampling method might be more appropriate. CASPER is useful throughout the disaster lifecycle, including all 4 phases of preparedness, response, recovery, and development of mitigation strategies for future disasters. Approximately 3 months after the spill, the recovery needs of the affected communities remained unclear, including the affected population's perception of health impacts from the spill, the use of alternative water sources, information sources, and public water systems, and the perception of public water system safety. On March 17, 2014, the West Virginia Bureau for Public Health, or West Virginia BPH, requested an EpiAid for CDC to assist in the field with conducting a CASPER. The CASPER was conducted the week of April 7, 2014. Conducting the CASPER during the recovery phase of the Elk River chemical spill provided an opportunity to assess response to the spill and the recovery needs of the affected communities. CASPERs are designed to allow completion of data gathering, analysis, and generation of preliminary recommendations in 1 work week. During the week of April 7th, 2014, on Monday the 7th, we conducted an all-day general CASPER training for the interview teams and additional trainees. The household interviews, data entry, and initial data analysis were performed on Tuesday, April 8th through Thursday, April 10th. And on Friday, April 11th, we presented the initial data analysis results and recommendations in the exit interview. The objectives of this CASPER were to assess the perceived impact of the chemical spill on households, assess communications to identify effective approaches for the current and future events, and to provide West Virginia BPH with information on household water use and practices during and after the Do Not Use order. We used a two-stage cluster sampling design and defined the sampling frame as the geographic area covered by the West Virginia American Water Company's Do Not Use order. In the first stage of sampling, 30 clusters, where each cluster was one census block, were selected within the Do Not Use order sampling frame. These clusters were selected with a probability of selection proportional to the number of households according to the U.S. 2010 census, and was carried out using the CASPER Geographic Information System, or GIS, tool within GIS software. The GIS shapefile outlining the Do Not Use order area was available only to the West Virginia BPH GIS experts directly from West Virginia American Water Company. So CDC held an ad hoc training for West Virginia BPH GIS experts on the CASPER GIS tool to assist them in this first stage sampling process. In the second stage of sampling, which occurred in the field, 7 households were selected by field interview teams from each of the 30 clusters using systematic sampling for a goal of 210 total household interviews. I wanted to take a minute or two to briefly explain the origin of the 210 household interviews. The two-stage cluster sampling design was actually originally proposed for the World Health Organization's community-based survey to increase their survey team efficiency over the efforts needed for a simple random sample when estimating vaccine coverage in developing countries. The technique was designed to estimate the proportion of vaccine coverage within 10%, in other words, a precision of 0.1, with 95% confidence and a design effect of 2. So for simple random sampling, the formula is seen here, where N is the required sample size, P is the proportion, D is the precision, and alpha would be 0.05 for 95% confidence. Here I have plugged in the values for these variables. The proportion P can take on values between 0 and 1, and this formula for calculating N, again the required sample size, is maximized for P equals 0.5 in order to be conservative. Plugging in the values, N, our required sample size, is just over 96. Now we multiply by 2 for the design effect, and the required sample size is now just over 192. In order for a clustered sample to be deemed representative, it is recommended that at least 30 clusters be selected in the sample. So if we're going to use 30 clusters, how many households should be selected in each cluster? If we choose 6 households in each cluster, our sample size will only be 180, and this is not enough to meet the 192. With 7 households in each cluster, the required sample size of 192.08 is exceeded. So in WHO's immunization surveys, the 30x7 cluster design was developed, and the same approach and design has been incorporated in the CASPER methodology, which uses this 30x7 design. This map of West Virginia shows the affected counties in yellow. The red star is the approximate location of the city of Charleston. This zoomed-in map of southwestern West Virginia shows the affected counties again, this time outlined in pink, with the yellow star near the middle indicating the chemical spill site along the Elk River near Charleston. The sampling frame of the Do Not Use order area is shown in light brown, and the green circles are the clusters selected by the CASPER GIS tool. All clusters were visited by interview teams. This is an example of one of the detailed imagery maps provided to the interview teams. The selected clusters outlined in purple, and information about the cluster is given on the right-hand side of the page, including the number of housing units within the cluster, here 11, and the number of households to sample, here, 7. The reference point coordinates, represented by the green dot on the map in the middle of the cluster, is only used as a navigational tool to direct the interview team to the cluster. Once they arrive at the cluster, a household is randomly selected as the starting point for the systematic sampling of the 7 households to interview. During the preparation for the CASPER, West Virginia BPH and CDC collaborated to create data collection forms for the CASPER. The introduction letter and consent script were read and handed out to each selected household to obtain consent. The 2-page household-based questionnaire included questions on demographics, perceived health outcomes, household impact, communications, alternative water sources, public water supply behaviors, and beliefs. The tracking form was used to collect information about each selected household to calculate response rates, and the confidential referral form was included so that interview teams would be prepared to complete referrals for any household with an urgent need for services. The West Virginia BPH released a press release on April 3, 2014, the week before the CASPER, which was posted to the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources Office of Communications website, and the local police department was also notified. 2-person interview teams conducted household interviews using the household-based questionnaire. Eligible respondents for the household-based survey were residents of the selected household who were 18 years of age or older. Interview teams also handed out public health information to all interviewed households, as well as any other person who was interested or requested information. Information selected by the West Virginia BPH to be handed out was the Disaster Distress Helpline Sheet on Emotional Preparedness from the Department of Health and Human Services, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA. We performed data entry and cleaning in EpiInfo 7. We then performed a weighted cluster analysis, also in EpiInfo 7, to generate population estimates for percentage of households within the sampling frame with 95% confidence intervals for each question. I will now present the results. Here are the response rates for the CASPER. The contact rate is the percentage of households that complete a survey after the household is selected and contact is attempted. It is calculated by dividing the total number of completed surveys by the number of selected households. Of the households selected, 41% completed interviews. The cooperation rate is the percentage of households that complete a survey after contact has been made and is calculated by dividing the total number of completed surveys by the number of households where contact was made. In other words, someone was spoken to or the door was answered. Of households where contact was made, 63% were eligible and willing to participate and completed a questionnaire. The completion rate is the number of completed interviews compared to the ideal number of completed interviews and is calculated by dividing the total number of completed surveys by the gold number of completed surveys, which, as I mentioned, is usually 210. Overall, interview teams completed 171 of the intended 210 interviews for a completion rate of 81%. The demographics of the respondents were similar to the most recent census estimates of the counties included in the sampling frame, with the majority of households reporting having at least one person aged 18 to 64 years and the household members as being non-Hispanic white. Of all households, 21.7% reported anyone in the household having health issues they felt were related to the spill. Of households reporting members with health issues, the most common symptoms reported were rash and skin irritation or itching. Of households reporting members with health issues, when asked where medical care was sought, 54.2% of households responded did not seek medical care. And of those who did not seek medical care, the most common reason at 66.8% was because the health issues were not serious enough. We asked all households when they first learned about the spill. In this graph, date is on the x-axis and weighted percent of households with 95% confidence intervals is on the y-axis. Almost 80% of all households first learned about the chemical spill on January 9, 2014, the same day the spill occurred. By the next day, January 10th, in total, about 93% of all households had learned about the spill. We also asked all households how or from whom or where they first learned about the spill. 54.3% of all households first learned about the spill from TV. The next most common way households first learned about the spill, though substantially less than the percentage that learned from TV, was face-to-face talking to people, or in other words, word of mouth, at 12.5%. Of all households, when asked about information sources about the spill, 83.1% received information about the spill via television at some point after the spill. The majority, or 58%, of all households considered television the most reliable source of information about the spill. Before the spill, 74.4% of all households did not have a 3-day alternative water supply for each household member and pet. We also found that not all households within the sampling frame were directly affected by the Do Not Use order. 75% of households reported being directly affected, meaning they were instructed not to use their water for anything other than flushing toilets or extinguishing fires. The rest of the results will refer only to the subset of directly affected households. Almost all, or 97.5% of households directly affected by the Do Not Use order, reported trying to obtain an alternative water source. And of these, about 84% successfully obtained an alternative water source the same day they attempted to obtain it. Of households directly affected by the Do Not Use order that reported trying to obtain an alternative water source, 70.8% were able to obtain water by purchasing it from a large store or grocery. Other places where households were commonly able to obtain water were a water distribution site in the household's town of residence at 47.3% and water from a friend or relative at 45%. Although most households were able to obtain water either the same day or the following day after first seeking an alternative water source, some households reported being without water for longer periods of time. The graph at the top shows the number of days directly affected households reported being without any alternative source of drinking water. About 55% of directly affected households reported they were never without any alternative source of drinking water, and almost 30% reported being without for less than one day. Lengths of time of one day or more were reported, but much less frequently. Of these households that reported being without an alternative source of drinking water for one or more days, 47.9% reported the reason as store was out of water. 37.4% of households directly affected by the Do Not Use order reported using West Virginia American Water Company water while the Do Not Use order was in effect. The most common uses included showering or bathing, washing hands, and washing clothes. Of households reporting using their West Virginia American Water Company water during the Do Not Use order, 26.6% reported that they drank the water. Approximately 3 months after the spill, at the time of the CASPER questionnaire, 98.3% of directly affected households were using the water for at least one purpose. However, only 33.5% reported using the water for drinking. Regarding the perception of public water system safety, among directly affected households, 85.6% reported that before the spill, they believed the water supplied by West Virginia American Water Company was safe. When asked, since the Do Not Use order was lifted, do you believe that the West Virginia American Water Company supplied your water your household receives is safe, only 36.1% replied yes. To assist recovery efforts and improve future responses, we made the following recommendations. Although less than one quarter of households had at least one person with symptoms they felt were related to the spill at some time in the 3 months following the spill, we recommended local public health officials promote the availability of health resources to help community members access needed services. Because communication by television played an important role in residents learning about the spill and was the most trusted source of information about the spill, we recommended West Virginia BPH focus on TV for public messaging during disasters when communication infrastructure remains intact. Most households were not adequately prepared for a lack of water crisis. Therefore, we recommended public health officials encourage households to maintain a 3-day water supply to help prepare for future emergencies or disasters of any type. We recommended for West Virginia BPH to identify additional ways of providing alternative sources of water supplies in future emergencies, for example, using volunteer agencies, employers, or community centers to deliver alternative water supplies to assist those unable to obtain water within 1 day. And because less than half of households thought their water supply was safe since the Do Not Use order was lifted, compared to the majority who thought it was safe before the spill, we recommended local public health officials increase community education to address the public's concern about the water. Public messaging, especially through the most trusted source of information, in this case TV, might help alleviate some consumer concerns. The findings of this CASPER are subject to the following limitations. Self-report is subject to recall bias, especially since the CASPER was conducted 3 months after the spill. Considerable publicity surrounding the spill also might have influenced accurate recall of household experiences. Representativeness could be affected if there are differences between those who participated and those who were not reached or refused to participate in the CASPER. And the precision of estimates might be reduced in questions with smaller sample sizes. I would like to thank and acknowledge my many colleagues who participated in this CASPER. Thank you. The water distribution sites, as far as I know, were set up. They had a number of water distribution sites where people could bring their own containers and fill, or I think maybe some places even might have provided containers. So we did ask if they obtained water from the water distribution site either in their town or a neighboring town. And so that was one of the more common places that people were able to obtain water, was either from a large store or grocery or one of those water distribution sites, particularly in their own town.
And then my second question is, I realize that CASPERs aren't meant to, have the interviewers go out and deliver supplies and those sorts of things, but I'm wondering if you were able to deliver any kind of information related to, resources or just even more information about the spill, the situation itself.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about CASPERs is that you have that face-to-face interaction with the household or household members, and so the information selected to provide them was that disaster distress helpline sheet. We also did give the interview teams a list of resources, so if someone in the household, asked, where can I get more information, they had a list of contact names and emails and websites that they could have given out.
I was sort of struck by one of the slides that you presented at the end that suggested that maybe 10 to 15% of the people that you surveyed didn't trust the water supply prior to the spill. And I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit. Is that something that you think was biased by when you were asking them? Do you think were there odor issues that led to mistrust? Were you looking here at data from other jurisdictions? About, I don't actually know how to sort of frame that in terms of general trust of water supplies.
The CASPER, you know, we didn't ask follow-up questions about why they distrusted either before the chemical spill or since the do not use order was lifted. We didn't ask those follow-up why questions. Certainly a future CASPER could. I do know, you know, anecdotally interview teams would come back and say that people were very willing to talk about general issues that they had, and so it could be, there could be some recall bias, but I think to really know exactly why, you know, you would have to go and ask those folks.
Can you please speak up from the area where the chemical spill occurred is called the Chemical Valley? Now chemical and a bunch of chemical plants are within that area, and I am a transplant to that area, and people have mentioned to me about the water safety issues and so I was one of the people who was drinking water beforehand, but now I don't really do that anymore. I may just
Thanks, Miguel.
Sorry, quick question on CASPER. So it seems like vulnerable populations are big and needing to account for them in disaster response and planning. So I didn't notice on the demographic slide, I probably wasn't paying attention, but did you guys run across households that didn't speak English as a primary language, and what was your strategy on that? As well as maybe other vulnerable populations like homeless, that kind of thing.
We did not ask. I don't remember asking what the primary language was, but I didn't hear of any interview teams coming back and saying that was a problem. And then other vulnerable populations, we did ask if there were any pregnant women in the household at the time of the CASPER questionnaire. And that wasn't on the demographic slide, but I believe it's about 5% of households reported one or more pregnant women in the household at the time of the CASPER questionnaire.
Nice presentation. Do you think this was cost effective? And if so, was this the right time to do it? I know the reason why you did it this time, but was this the right time to do it? Should have done that earlier? And what would you recommend for other similar situations?
I think doing the CASPER in the recovery period was really beneficial. I think we got a lot of really good information about continued mistrust of the water supply, and that's really what led to the recommendation. You know, and we found out that TV was really the most trusted source of information. So there were a lot of benefits of doing it during the recovery period that we found out that these were ongoing issues, and I think the recommendations that came out of it were things that hopefully could help alleviate those consumer concerns. And in terms of recommendations, so I do think that doing it in the recovery period was definitely effective, and we got really good actionable information out of it. And the second part of your question was just recommendations for the future?
Well, yeah, I mean, similar environments, similar communities that have, where the risk of a chemical spill might be greater. I mean, would you say do your CASPER at 3 weeks, or would you say something else?
I mean, I think certainly doing a CASPER during the acute phase of an emergency or a disaster, the goal of a CASPER is to generate actionable information for decision makers, so that could always be helpful, but I think also deciding that your resources are better put into making sure people have water for daily living is certainly something that needs to be prioritized as well.
I have a question about using CASPERs. Can you generalize from this CASPER as to how useful it is to ask questions about health effects at the household level? Because I remember we had some discussion about the utility of that when it was being designed.
I mean, CASPERs are designed to generate household-based information, so we certainly, they're not designed to get at individual level, and that's based on the sampling design and the weighting and just the methodology of it. I think that it's still useful to ask about health effects. You know, even though we don't have individual level data, we do have data now that's consistent with other studies like the one that Erica presented.
Question, and I'm not sure who to ask it to, but how sure is the group that this spill occurred when it was, had the spill been a small spill prior to this larger spill? I mean, was there any concern in the community that it had been leaking before it spilled, and that it was just detected at the when it really spilled a large amount? Does anyone have known that information?
I certainly don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very fair question, and I think that is definitely a concern that was in the community, that they wondered, you know, if the tank had been leaking for some time, and if the leak had just been finally large enough that it was over to be protected.
Yeah.
And that's just not an answer that we have. We have to sort of go.
So I didn't know if the company had, you know, any additional information or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they would be really willing to disclose that information if they did have it. So.
That's true. Okay.
I was wondering, when your household teams went out, they carried with them the referral form in case they had any emergency issues. Since this wasn't during the acute phase of a disaster, I think it was odds are less likely to find someone. Did you get any of those back?
I don't remember getting any referral forms back. Yeah.
Any additional questions? Well, thank you very much for interesting.